Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Today, here on It's My House, we have a special guest in the studio, and the topic is families helping families. Okay, so we want to see what that's about. And let's see. Oh, 773. Delmar, good morning.
Good morning.
I agree with you. Great morning. Families helping families. That's your brainchild. Tell us about what is Families Helping Families.
Okay, we are launching campaign. Been in ministry for several years, and somewhat like the last speaker said, we have had our moments of disappointment and failure, but it's a part of the process, the journey. And through much of that, we have been being, shall we say, processed, fine-tuned to a particular calling. And at this point in our journey, the word that came to us is focus on the family. And having listened to that, I've discovered that there are so many truths about family, so many facts that are so valuable, priceless, that man did not establish, cannot destroy, did not purchase, whatever. So in looking at that, we just noticed that family is the nugget, the unprocessed, or the gem, whatever, all the terms that have been ever since humanity, back Humanity starts with family. And so family helping families is about us recognizing, rediscovering, reviving this information and putting it into use by a process that we believe says all the good that we would wish to do, could do, might do, I really believe we can do it more effectively through the avenue of family. So we are launching this business /ministry to, again, create awareness. Hopefully people become engaged and, again, discover what has been, shall we say, overlooked, forgotten about, put in the shadow about power, benefit, the glory in what we can do as family. You know, we have organizations, we have clubs, we have corporate structure, we have teams, we have all those kind of terminologies, but family.
Mm-hmm.
Family. And anything that right now in the news, one of the great highlights from any channel right now, they are observing the Thanksgiving memorial thing for the passing of Queen Elizabeth of England. And when you go and look at what they're talking about, one of the core parts that they keep bringing out is that you're looking at a family that dates back 1,000 years. Family. That's
right.
The recognized definition of what has kept that monarch and that part of that nation where it is. And anything, as they're interviewing people, they're talking about some people saying, well, you know, we could disband that monarch and how much it costs and all those kind of things. But it may be, I don't know, I haven't checked, but it may be the only nation that has the reputation and the example of what can happen on the positive side when family is recognized and maintained and held on to. I'm really thankful for what they have demonstrated in the fact that this has been a family monarch. For, I mean, just this one lady, she was there 70 years, I believe, as a queen. And so her son has committed to carry on the tradition. And so, again, look at what can happen when family, just right now in modern time, that's one to think about. So to answer your question, family is that element that we believe that for all the best that we could ever do, we can do it perhaps most effectively through family.
Right. Matter of fact, I'm looking up now, monarchies in Africa, and I'm on Wikipedia for those who want to follow. There are several monarchies in Africa defined by as either actually or nominally self-governed states, territories, and nations on the continent of Africa where supreme power resides with an individual who is recognized as the head of state. They have constitutional monarchies, and they have absolute monarchies. And the current monarchies in Africa are the Kingdom of Morocco, and they have a constitution and a heredity monarchy. The Kingdom of Eswatini, what used to be named Swaziland, they have an absolute monarchy, but they have a hereditary, the succession is hereditary and elective. And let's see, the third one that currently exists is the Kingdom of Lesotho. So those are three monarchies that are in current in Africa that is current. And formerly they had others as well, but we'll get into that later. So, and a lot of these are basically structured. If you look, study a lot of these African or any monarchy, I guess they're sort of like de facto businesses. The royal family of England, basically, they're landlords. A lot of people don't think of them that way, but they're essentially landlords. But anyway, getting back to helping families, families helping families, what are some of the ways that families can help families right here in the USA?
Well, thank you for that question. And it's, we are fortunate, I believe, blessed, in that we have several historical groups who have demonstrated the pattern of what can be done when families help families. I'm looking at the information you have here on the outline. Family helping families, you have the Amish economics, the Mennonite economics. I hope I'm not jumping ahead of your thoughts, but if we even go back to the black community, and there are several that we could cite, but one of them, if we go back to the Tulsa, Oklahoma story, as far as the economic aspect, those were families that had that successful structure there, that economic base that we've since named it and held onto as a Black Wall Street, you know, referring to the Wall Street being perhaps the term for the best example of economics. But then, if you go back and if you did the research, you find that the success, the core of that success was families. And fact about it, the strength of the black community, even during slavery, the reason we survived, I believe, we survived as families. Yes, we had individuals who did great things.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason it was strong as it was, and it, I believe it was much stronger as a family than it is now as a family, was because we had this sense of unity, of working together, taking each other. And again, I was blessed to grow up in a culture in the South where I remember in the fall of the year, there are specific things that a family from a certain radius got together and made sure that every family was in position to get through the winter without anyone being in need of things. There was the basic housing, food, clothing. But that was done because the ones who were stronger kept the ones who were weaker. Therefore, the collective, that's already been modeled. We didn't have a welfare system that made sure everybody, yeah, it was out there, of course. I'm not saying the government didn't have one. But we weren't dependent upon that only. We believe, again, the most successful families in the area reached out and connected, and we made sure that there was a helping hand always. So your question, how today, again, let's look back at the models. We have some. And if we go back and look at what principles, laws that never have changed, will never change, would work today, we'd have to employ different, perhaps, procedures. But again, just a very statement, family. Again, once we recognize the value of that family and the family, definitely families, anytime you have that kind of unity, you have the synergy, you have the law effect, the law of the universe. And so we could do that today, provided we re-embrace the same principles that we use. We couldn't, this solo idea of I've got mine, you get yours, and et cetera. And I believe that there are some examples even today of some black families who are very successful, and again, they model the success that comes when families come together, work together, even with the challenges. There's always going to be the challenges, the conflicts, the difference, always going to be there. But the commitment to family. I remember a statement, you probably heard it, family, a home, is a place that when you have to go, they have to take you in. You know, no matter how you feel about the individual or what they feel to do or did do, because there's family, there's some sense of connection and responsibility that goes with that. So we could do much more as a family than we can as individuals. Individuals do a lot. No question about it. They're not taking anything away from individuals who have succeeded in various fields of sports and entertainment and music. And last night there was the Emmy Award, when certain people were recognized for what they've accomplished, those kind of things. And no doubt if you were to go back and turn your pages, they probably give much of their success to someone in the family that encouraged them, didn't give up on them, and that's why they're getting the recognition that they're now achieving.
Well, matter of fact, to give a little bit more history and talk about families helping families, I'm back on Wikipedia. The current British monarch, I'm reading here, traces his origins back to from the petty kingdoms of Anglo-Saxon England and early medieval Scotland, which consolidated into kingdoms of England and Scotland by the 10th century. Let me see. All right, royal family facts. How did the royal family start? The two origins. And let's see. The royal family has ruled over England and the United Kingdom for generations, handing the crown down through several different families with common ancestry. But how did the royal family start? The royal family, through dozens of monarchs, has spent nearly a millennia. Dom, are you still there? Okay, I don't know if you're still there.
Yes, I'm still here. I'm muted myself, but
I have noise around me. Okay, no problem. Has spent millennia leading Britain, Queen Mary of the Sea. All right. The royal family arguably started in two places. One in ten. Well, the royal family that King Charles III, who we have right now, this goes back as far as 1066. Okay. The current royal family line emerged with the Norman invasion of 1066, when William the Conqueror landed in England. He disposed of the monarch at the time, which was Harold Godwinson, dismantling the House of Wessex. And they got a picture of him online. So this goes back, his descendants passed the crown through a tangled mess of relatives and houses, and it eventually came to James the Sixth in 1603. Anyway, this goes back, and they map all this out online. This goes back to 1066. So, as I said on here before several times, everything starts with one. But it seems like the royal family, and there are other royal families too, like I said, there's at least three active monarchs in Africa right now. It seems like the common denominator is family before anything else, because there was dysfunction in, there's dysfunction in every family, but through it all, they put family first, and they go from generation to generation. And most people and most families are what I would call lone wolves. Is if I can't get any value out of it for myself, I'm out of the family. Whereas it seems like the royal family, and there's been they're human like everybody else, there's dysfunction like everybody else, but they've, you know, over the centuries, they've just perfected their business model as well as political model. So those are two things that they've managed to keep intact. Anyway, your thoughts, Dale.
May I see a thought?
Sure.
Even this morning, as I was again listening, observing, the question came up by one of the reporters, why is it that the Queen never apologized for their participation in slavery, suppression, and you know, the British were known to go in and conquer and rule, etc. They mentioned that when the Queen came to power, they were like had 50 some different related territories or parts of the world that they could control or were dominant over. Now it's down to 15. So the question was, the Queen never apologized. So one of the things that one of the former prime ministers said on this particular part of the interview was that this particular queen managed to keep a balance between the politics and the other advantages of the royal family. You know, it was both. Britain is both. It's not just one or the other. It's been both.
Right.
And so far there's been this balance of not trying to mix the two and make it all come out even. And it's believed that for this particular queen, may she seen how many political figures come and go, male and female. But her consistency, the throne, the family consistency, again, by sticking with certain principles. And the other thing we have to remember, laws and principles never fail. Humans fail. But the principles and laws that make it work, that are eternal, they never fail. And when you don't have something to go back to that never fails, then the human part of it will move progression away from it. But if you're committed to family, which again, man can't take credit for that. He did not create family like, you know, man will create an organization or a club or a team, and it may succeed, it may fall, all that. But if it's man-made, it has flaws in it anyway. But when you look at the origin of the principles and laws of family and what those laws and principles mean, they will never change. And so, again, going back to all the coming and going and the success and failures, those individuals that had made a commitment that give and take whatever, the family must survive all else. And I believe you can find some of these same examples in Asian communities. May not be monarch so much. Monarch means one rule, but point is you can find that thread of family value. That's the word you're going to put in. Family value. They're things that they didn't compromise. And by the way, one of the things that's always brought out that we all are aware of the kind of a little sensitivity, I want to say, that happened with the young man that married the other lady, and now there's something about that. But they said his new king, each time he has made a statement, he has constantly reached out and made it known by his actions, words, and what. I'm not going to exclude or leave that young man, his wife, and family out. They are included, and he's doing special and saying same things. Say, no matter what different has been said and done, we're going to keep you included because it's family.
Right.
We're not going to just let it drop. He's not going to let it drop. So, again, that's making a statement that these people still believe what? Family. And, again, I believe there's much we can learn from this approach. With all of the negative, bad parts and all that, we can do that. And I always tell people, when you start attacking something, go get in the mirror and see if you can lead yourself out of that. Because none of us, wherever we are in life, can say, I got here perfectly, made no mistakes, no failures. No, any success you have, you can credit to yourself and anybody else. There are failures that you learn by along the way to get to who you are right now. So same thing about monarchs and families, same thing about America and other countries. Vice President Harris was asked what would happen if Trump was brought to trial. Could the country stand that? And she made the statement that America has had to acknowledge some bitter truths, some facts that were dirty and nasty, I was to say. But she said we've moved on from that. And that's what we have to recognize. Yes, there's some ugly, nasty stuff about family. But the principles of what a family means, the values, and what it will do, we move on past that. Because we can't undo them.
Right.
Why trying to deny that it happened. No, it happened. It was ugly. It was nasty. I remember when we were forming one of our family reunions, we found out, some people found out that who was sisters and brothers and all that weren't true to what actually happened, because we had situations in the past where families moved and were all living in one house, and people end up in bed with people who were not supposed to be, but you had children come out of that, and oftentimes they passed it along as brothers and sisters or uncles and cousins, when in truth were, they were not that. Those distinctions were not true. And when it came out, who was whose parents and daddies and mothers and all that, people were crying and getting angry and all that, and we had to work through that fact that that's happened, those people are gone. No amount of anger is going to change that, but we're moving forward as a family, and that's what we're doing.
Right, right. Well, let's get back to families helping families here. Let me get more into the Queen, that she just passed away, Queen Elizabeth. And here's something I'm reading online. What was Queen Elizabeth's salary? And she did have an income, a personal income. The monarch's income is drawn from the Duchy of Lancaster, which is a, now what's the Duchy of Lancaster? The Duchy of Lancaster is a portfolio of, now this is what I love about the royal family. Fundamentally, everything that they've done, anybody can do. All right, the Duchy of Lancaster, which I guess is their holding company, is a portfolio of land, property, and assets held in trust for the reigning sovereign. In 2018, the Privy Purse received nearly £20 million or $26 million in income. That's the Queen. That's her yearly income. All right. Now, who is the richest member of the royal family? The newly appointed King Charles III has an estimated net worth of $600 million, inheriting nearly $28 billion in assets belonging to the Crown Estate plus Buckingham Palace. Now, you got to take in mind that these assets have been accumulating over centuries, and each royal heir, and you, matter of fact, if you look up the word royalty in a law dictionary, okay, look up the word royalty in a law dictionary, another name for it is rent. The royal family's primary income source, they're landlords. And anybody within the sound of our voice can be a landlord. All right, it's not a difficult thing to do. We can all become landlords. So they have been landlords, and their primary source of income is through rental property. And I find that very interesting. They just kept that intact, and they just roll it over from generation to generation. And they teach their children, like King Charles III, he's got grandchildren, little ones now. But they teach them almost out of the womb on what their responsibility is, what the family business is, what the family estate is. They train them from little. And that's how they, including the politics of how to keep it. Okay. And that's why they've been able to keep it century after century after century.
Now jump in and comment real quick. What you said, that we could do that. And again, as you say, even where the principle is used where families come together and build housing and then rent those housing out, one of the first sources of those who become the tenants would be family members, which means you're
right.
Keeping that again, you create a family foundation or a trust or something where there's money that's there for the benefit of the family for various reasons. We have many of them. But again, but when the family owns real estate, as you say, or other properties that are revenue producing, could be transportation. But again, who are the primary uses of that? Would be other family members. You wouldn't go outside the family unless you couldn't get it no other way. But again, everything that has been practiced that works as a rule, if black families do the same thing, they get the same results by law, the principle. You know, 2 times 2 is 4, that's no cultural difference in mathematics. Now, we may find where somebody stole something, somebody like that. Now, we're talking about all the human failures that are there. But again, as you said, the principle is it would work. It's not going to be, well, that works for them, that works for us. No. Yeah. The laws of the universe, the laws of prosperity, poverty, whatever it is, it works both ways. The laws that fail, I mean, if the fail is a result of something that was done, and either way, it's no different. So thank you for saying that, making that point, yes. And I had not heard this, so thank you for sharing that. Where did this wealth come from? Centuries, not even said millenniums of a thing. And they did some wrong stuff to get there, okay? No lie about that. They did some wrong stuff to get there. But again, we're looking at the principles. What could we learn that we could use without doing the wrong stuff that would help a community? And again, families make up communities. When those communities, and again, I make this observation when I'm sharing, when blacks were forced into what we call segregation, we were strong as communities, as families, when we had to work together and also choose to, again, go back to Wall Street, Tulsa, they built an economic model because they committed to what? Trading with each other, because their trading wasn't welcome or wasn't appreciated outside their circle. And they saw that, hey, what? All of them heard about the number of times that currency, money has to circulate within a family, within a community for the benefit. So that money was circulated around and around. You and I talked about this recently, Ellie, that I think the current statement that the dollar stayed in the black community just a matter of hours. Other cultures had to be so many days, 18 days, 28 days, all that. But in our, it only stayed there. But when you recognize what's going on and what principles work, that is what builds strength of the example here. We're talking about monarchs, whatever. But what, as you say, closing point, you say, what they have done can be done by anyone today. Commit to it and practice the same principles, we get the same result. Thank you.
Correct. Now, when we come back, we want to take a look at more of Families Helping Families with Delmar here, as well as some of the fundamentals that you're talking about as in comparing to the rural families, like, say, not only now, because when people say rural family, they think of England, but it's just not them. We're going to take a look at the Kingdom of Lesotho, and Lesotho is a country in Africa which has a monarch. Okay, they've got a king. They have a royal family. So, and a royal family basically is a business. So that's why I'm looking at it. Like I say, the royal family of England, all right, they're landlords. Okay. They are landlords. They collect rent, but they've been doing it for centuries, and they have the political through the centuries. They have developed the here's my definition of politics. Politics is the art and science of protecting your interest. So. Let's say you have nothing to your name other than a dry cheese sandwich. Just a dry cheese sandwich. A day-old dry cheese sandwich. But it's yours. Okay? There are people in the world that, for some reason, that they don't have a dry cheese sandwich at all. and they're hungry, or maybe they're not hungry at all. They just want to have your day-old dried cheese sandwich because you have it, okay? Now, some of them might try to take it, which means you got to develop the defensive skills to defend yourself. Or they might want to, you know what, let's come up with a law that so-and-so can't have a dried cheese sandwich in Cook County, Illinois. Whatever. Okay. So, but politics is the art and sciences of protecting whatever you might have. So the royal family, the reason why that family has been able to grow from generation to generation is because, you know, politics. Like, for instance, the late Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, who just transitioned, she never made any public statements, any public political statements. She didn't get involved with it. And King whoever, I got to do the research on it, King whoever, way back when, who started all this off, okay, because everything starts with one. All right. He looked down the line and said, you know what? I don't want to have the common person take it, you know, disrupt what I've built up for my family. You know, I've got to share some power. So the throne of England, which is now represented by King Charles III, way back when, you know what, the king does, at least in England, doesn't have absolute power. That king, whoever, was smart enough to say, you know what, let me share this with the people, all right? And thus you got Parliament, where the common average Joe can run for elective office through a so-called democracy, and, you know, you got the House of Commons and all that. And because, you know, people want to have a little bit of the pie. They want to have some power. So they've been able to keep the throne and the family business intact because they're not making political statements publicly towards the left or the right or even the center. And, you know, you got prime ministers that come in. You got all kind of people. Mayors and whatever the legal system over that's sharing the power. Meanwhile, that's been able to stave off the lions trying to get this stuff. Because if you know something about Russian history, Tsar Nicholas, they took his whole family out. They killed them all. Whatever. So these current day monarchs, I have to give them a lot of credit because they know, all right, well, let's share the power with the people, and that way our family business can stay intact. And part of the family business is none of their family members have to start all over from scratch. The Queen Elizabeth died. She passed on. There is no probate. The way they set up their family, and everybody can model what they have done. Fundamentally speaking, everybody within the society, if you're on Skid Row, if you're in a shelter right now, fundamentally, you can model what they've done, start from scratch. Now, you're not going to amass the wealth they did overnight because they didn't amass it overnight. It took them centuries to amass what they got. But the thing is, none of them have to go through probate. None of them have to go to social services office. If one of them becomes, or a few of them get down on their luck, they got a roof over their head. These are fundamental things that anybody within the sound of my voice can plan and act on right now today.
Yes, sir. I'm coming.
Yeah, yes, sir, Delma.
Hello? Yeah, two things. First, he made the point that royalty is a business. And what's interesting about this, what you just said, is life itself, other than slavery, is a business. I mean, unless you're going to be in servitude all your life, in that case, you don't have to make a decision, just do what the master or the system tells you. But if you're going to be in control of life, if you're going to be the head and not the tail, as you say, you're going to have to recognize the business of life to maintain it. And like you say, these families did that. Second point is, you say, whatever you a person choose to do to reset himself, I'm teaching and saying that you are more likely to do it most successfully through family. Yes, you can do a lot of things by yourself, but when you can contact family people and get them involved and see the same principle, as you say, we're pursuing this to make not just me stronger, but to secure all of us, because, again, because of the family economics that come together when you do this, we have a common purse or a common source of economic finance, so that when one does get in trouble or whatever situation happens, and things do happen, what we could reach out and secure, maintain that person without threatening everybody. And again, the principle of that work is insurance, not life, just insurance itself, which goes all the way back to, let's go back to that. But again, you have these funds set aside, what, to be used in emergencies to make sure nobody gets wiped out. Then if we look at the sports field, I know in the NBA and the NFL where you have so many teams, where the team at the bottom gets the option on the best upcoming players because they want the whole league to succeed. They don't want some team to be eliminated because it lost so many games. No, this loses game. We want that team to keep playing so it gets a chance to maintain. So the philosophy is we all win when we win together rather than letting somebody go down the tube because we didn't care. So, again, what you're saying is so important to understanding that the success of families, raw families, the business principles that they hold on to, and as you say, there has to be something in place to protect it. You just can't believe that the world is going to leave you alone. As you say, well, that's family. I like what you said about the family. There are people who want to destroy your family, even though they don't want to eat, they just don't want you to see you have it. I mean, all these kind of things come into it. So you have to have things in place. So, again, here, bring in politics. And as you say, the royal family has been able to maintain this balance of saying we're not going to try to miss the two. As you say, just in the case of this one woman, we go all the way back to World War II when she was just a young lady. She participated in supporting the government during the wartime. But through all the various political figures that have been through her 7 years, they never got entangled to the extent that the politics threatened the royal family or the royal family threatened the politics. That's my understanding. I may be, somebody can say, well, no, that didn't happen. So what you're saying is so right on. There's so much here to learn and recognize and use that can apply for today. So thank you for sharing that.
Right, and let's see. I'm looking at the legal definition of royalty, and I'm reading here, royalty is a compensation to the owner of intellectual property or natural resources for the right to use or profit from the property. Let's see. Land royalty. Royalty lands means all lands in which royalty owner currently owns as a working interest, including or without limitation. So anybody within the sound of my voice or our voices can be, hey, the royal family started off with one property. Okay. And you also heard natural resources. I mean, you know, if you got land with trees on it, you got land with a running stream through it. You got land that's got various minerals on it or what have you. So they started with King whoever. And he just went, you know, through marriages. And, of course, they strategically marry. You know, they just don't marry anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they marry people
the family,
that can
right.
strengthen the family.
Objectively, yep, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah,
what you said also,
you're right.
Anything you're saying, if you got a tree or to water something, the law says you have the right, if you choose to monetize that or to use it to some purpose to create your economics. You know, you can lease
right.
the water or hire away or sell the wood off the tree. I mean, all those things are your right to do for the benefit what of the family. And, again, you go back, those families have done that rather than letting it go to waste. But they realize what resources are the elements that create wealth, resources.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
And that's what they've done. I mean, back centuries ago, you know, you think about you know, they had, and they consolidated with other families, you know, off of, with vast tracts
mm-hmm.
of land that was wooded. You know, think about it. The king basically was the de facto energy company. I mean, because essentially, in order to heat up their homes, people needed wood. So they controlled a lot of that, you know, back during those times. So, it, like I say, the royal family, they're landlords. That's their primary business now with, let's see, I just looked up something for you guys. Okay, well, I tell you what we'll do. We'll take a quick 2-minute break and we'll be back with Delma.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything. except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right, we got Delmar America here today, and he's, I guess, Families Helping Families. And we've also been taking a look at the Royal Family of England, and we're going to do a series on this, particularly the monarchs of Africa. And one of the countries I'm looking at right now is Lesotho, which has they have a monarch, they have a royal family. And if you study their royal family, everything they did in the early stages of their empire building, anybody within the sound of our voices can do the same thing. I'm looking at, like, the current bloodline in Lesotho. One of the people that this guy, he started, I'm reading here off Wikipedia, he started his own clan and became the chief around 1804. Between 1820 and 1823, he and his followers settled in the Boothi Mountain, joining with former adversaries in resistance under, all right, it goes into detail on that. And let me look at the definition of clan. Let me read what they have here online. A clan is a group of people united, actual or perceived kinship and descendant. If the lineage details are unknown, clans may claim a descent from founding member or ancestor. Clans are indigenous societies, tend to be, it gets into details on that, but definition, a clan is a group of people united by actual or perceived kinship. Well, as Beasley has often said on here several times, you have to have an identity, a common identity. Members, now I'm reading, these are not my words, I'm reading this online. Members of a clan may identify with a coat of arms or other symbol to show that they are an independent clan. Kinship-based groups may also have a symbolic ancestor whereby the clan shares a stipulated common ancestor who serves as the symbol of the clan's unity. Yeah, we got to do a series on this. But Delmar, I guess it goes to the root. These monarchs are simply at their origin, and even the ones that exist today, no matter what, through thick and thin, families helping families.
Yes, and again, truly there is no origin except through the process of creation where male and female got together and started something. And as you say, when those families reached a certain size, they were recognized by different terminology because they were more than just a household. But clans based on kinship, and even when the servants or other people associated with it were involved. Now, my strongest background about families is ancient Hebrew scriptures, and but not only scripture, but the history there. And again, the core power, strength of humanity as far as strength or weakness relates to the family. And again, right. I hope we do a series because, and not just a series for discussion, but I believe we can put forth and follow up on specific plans, names, dates, people, and get the results. We can prove this. This is not just talk for entertainment. This is life itself. And I wouldn't doubt we might find people who are actually doing this. Now, the statement that the gentleman just said in the interval there when you were playing that, like he said, I grew up in that A-frame house on the track. And again, the idea of an A-frame, everybody know what an A is, you know, how the A is made with the that's I grew up living in a house like that. And again, you can build them so simple. And again, you had three rooms. You looked through the front door to the back door. But like he say, you were not homeless. You were not out in the elements. And so that's a no model of L.A. to think about how simple that is. Just an A-frame house that secures people from the weather, from all the things. And you can do everything basic in that house to not only survive, but to succeed in life. You know,
right.
Build another house. And who, how, what the, and again, we know the adversary, as the man mentioned, stepped in and did things to block that. There's nothing he did that we can't undo. Nothing he did we can't undo. If it's dark, you turn on the light. You have to go there and fight and curse the light. I mean, to curse the darkness, what? You bring in the light. You don't have to go there and talk. You know. So all of this is solution-based. It's an answer. And I thank you for addressing this, but it's not just a subject to talk about and switch on to something else that might happen. But again, we can follow through on this and get it done. It becomes a information and a process that we can actually say on such and such date, place, time, this is happening, it's there, it's proof. And once you start that model, there's no limit to where it can go. Yes, including the opposition. There's going to be opposition, but that's life. Everybody succeeded had opposition.
But that's true.
Thank you.
That's even within within families. Let's see. Okay, wait a minute here. Are we going to take a quick break? Then we're going to go to the phone line since we got some callers here.
Thank you.
Okay, families helping families, and we have Delmore America on here today as a guest, and we've been talking about, we've been throwing in the rural family, because that's a family that over the centuries, they have helped other families, and in doing so, they've grown with material wealth as well as political wealth. And, all right, some people might be bad-mouthing them, you know, as an example. So let's go to the Amish community. And I'm going to name, and there's several Amish communities, but there's a town, I've covered them before here, Yoder, Kansas. Yoder spelled Y-O-D-E-R, Kansas. That's a whole town in Kansas that is primarily 163 people live there, and their family. Here's the common denominator with in Yoder, which has a population of 163 people. Most of those, first thing, all those families know each other. Number one, number two, most of those families, if not all of those families, have a family-based business. And then the third point within Yoder, and, you got Amish communities, you got Mennonite communities, and even the Monarch families of Africa, and I'm going to use this example before I go to Delmar. They have it set up through their family businesses that they get a paycheck. Now, they got to work for it, though, okay, within the family business. But like Queen Elizabeth, her paycheck was $26 million a year from the family business. The person who bakes shoe flyer pies in a family-based business in Yoder, Kansas, they get paid from the family business. Their children who work in the family business get a paycheck. Same thing in Losoto. I pronounced that wrong. I got to get that name right. But in any event, Eswatini, which is known as formerly known as Swaziland, the family business pays them. They don't have to go out and get a job with somebody else. Although temporarily, a lot of the rurals in their training, they do get outside jobs for whatever reason. That's part of the requirement. Like Queen Elizabeth, the late Queen Elizabeth, she was an auto mechanic in the Army, in the military, when she was a young woman. That's all part of the rural training. Delmar, your thoughts on, I forgot how you put it, but your family receiving a paycheck from your family. Your thoughts on that?
Okay, again, not an original idea. Not an original idea. And it can be structured in many different ways. But, again, it's happening in this country. And these people are not advertising on TV. You've never heard of them. But there are several multi-level network marketing companies that do just that. They're family business. And those families have done multi-million-dollar success to prove that it works. It's success because families are doing it. Then the household. The term I learned from it, I'm using it, is called internal consumption creates internal economics. So getting back to your comments about the pies, I think that term. But again, it's a product, it's a work, it's something being done. And family members are participating, and there's a revenue coming out of it. And again, it benefits somebody, the family, head of the household, that put them in a position where the whole family benefits from the success of that family-run business. It's not a new concept at all. Going back to ancient Hebrew scriptures, same thing. The wealth was in the family. Family became clans. Clans became nations. That wealth was there. Now, one of the downsides of the way Christianity is promoted in this country is wealth is not taught in this terrestrial experience we have as beings. All is about the hereafter. But when we look at the pattern, the mold, the model, not the mold, the model, that was given by the man who said it all, the person who said all that was, economics was first.
Mm-hmm.
Economics was first. What? Land ownership first to give the family stability. And from that point on, we find the same pattern. Loyalty, family business, wealth creation, wealth distribution. Poverty was never an accepted option. It existed for some, but it was never something that said, well, that's just the way it is. No. It's never just the way it is. It never be, it's okay. So that's my comment on that. It's not a new concept at all. It's going on in this country right now in many different ways. It's just a matter of person perhaps finding how, which way they want their family to structure themselves and create dynasty wealth. Our family. That's
right.
It.
Okay, let's see, take a call here. 314, your mic is open.
Hello, L.A.
Good morning, sir.
Well, the Elizabeth and Victorian family done what they had to do. But it wasn't for everybody. It never is. Within all society, there's always some people that have that type of thinking.
True.
That's just the luck of the draw.
Also true.
You,
most people,
you got that,
it's not going to fit into
that. Yeah, you got that same thing that goes on in all societies, no matter where they are on earth. It goes on in African society with the Akan and the hierarchy that they have established, even that exists today, with Osei Tutu, who's the king of the Ashanti. Then you have the Hene, who's the king of the Ewe. I mean, it exists today. So you're talking to a lot of people, but only a few, if any, is going to get involved in that. And it's not possible for everybody to be involved. You can't have a grocery store in every corner, right?
That's true. That's true.
And everybody's not going to want land. Hell, you got
that,
some
African. You're right about that. And everybody's not going to get along with everybody.
No. You got some African society that has offered, hey, go over in Liberia, 750 square miles. Do you realize what 750 square miles of land look like? In Ghana, the Fiankra Stool offered 35,000 acres. And over there in Ghana, in the Volta region where that acreage is offered, I think they eventually pulled that stool back because nobody took advantage of it. I think only 5 homes was built. So people will and people won't. That's just the way it is. That's why I say, if you're going to have an identity, your identity is your family. It's not no whole race, no whole ethnic group of people. That's ridiculous. It ain't going to happen. Never have happened. That's just the
and
way
I agree with the identity. It start with your family. That's where it starts.
Yeah, that's exactly. If you look in history, that's the way it's been.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks in America are United States citizens. They're not Africans. If they were and they thought along those lines, Zimbabwe offered land directly to black American farmers. In Ghana, the Fiankra Stool offered 35,000 acres to those in the diaspora, quote-unquote. In Liberia, 750 square miles in the River G, well, it's still there today. Kenya done the same thing. People don't want to do that. That's why it doesn't happen. And folks that try to coerce them into doing it is really doing a misservice. Because you put somebody in a position that they don't want to be. Like you got this mortgage loan company that's the nation's largest black-led mortgage company is offering black borrowers, offering mortgage loans just for black borrowers. Well, you know that's illegal. That's discrimination and racist. And if a white company tried that, they would be put into insolvency through fines and other legal action. I don't even know why people do such ridiculous. And what they're trying to do is trying to lure customers who would otherwise not come to their establishment for a variety of reasons. That's callous. Would you say?
Yes. You still there?
Yeah, well, I asked you a question. What would you,
yeah,
what you
I
think
said,
about
I,
that?
I said yes. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I just read the stories. I just put them out there. And this guy, you look at his eyes, he look at, yeah, I'm going to get you now, is the way he's looking like. It's just like with these student loans. They're the same way. You got companies out there that's sending students notifications saying that they can refinance their loan. And how many times have, you know, I said in particular, probably others too, if you're going to do something, like, first place, the government shouldn't have no damn business offering student loans anyway, because that causes a ramification that's multiplied. One thing, institution will raise their tuition price. Therefore, what you was getting in loan is completely wiped out. Second thing, if you're going to do that, we'll take the exemption of student loans from not being able to be bankrupt. That way, everybody can take advantage of it, not just those who earn less than $125,000, but let them be able to bankrupt it. That way, they can be held accountable. Because those who don't take out student loans and go through other means of saving and also making sure that their child can qualify for free money that's laying on the table in the form of scholarships, that's the way it should be, by merit, not by some backwater, under-the-table scheme.
Right. Delmar, any input? Or Tianki, any questions to Delmar? Families helping families.
Input? Input.
Yeah, input, output.
It's always the few. You're never going to put up anything that the masses are going to jump on it and come out on top. Again, many things have been offered that were by design were deceptive, and they got a lot of people in there for the purpose of enslaving them into some kind of bondage situation. But again, it's going to always be the few who choose something better, and I keep saying the best position to do that is do it as a family, collective, because when it's a trap where one person thinking, there's a lot of deception could be missed there. But if a family is deciding to do something together, the likelihood of the success and avoiding those deceptive traps and decisions that you could get into are more likely to be avoided. So again, yes, you're going to always have the masses are always going to be left out, whatever. If you look at Christianity, Jesus said what? The broad way, the masses, they're going to miss it. Few find the true light or choose it. It's a choice. It's an individual choice. But it's also a pattern of here. Families can make that choice. And those few families are going to be the ones. Anything you put out there, if you say it's going, everybody's going to jump on it, watch out. That is something wrong with that intuitively. And that's where it's always going to be some kind of downside trap. And by the way, I know your friend probably know this. I've heard through the media, again, that's all I know, what I heard in the media, that the Asian countries are going over there setting up loans for the seaport towns that by design, it's a trap. They know when these people sign off on these things, they're not going to be able to follow through on it. And then when they fail, they go in and close that off and do that, what they call it, close off, they foreclose on the loan and take over the whole thing. But they knew when they made the deal that that was something that they're not going to be able to keep it. And when they fail to keep the agreement, we're going to go in and take over that seaport, that distributorship or transportation system. That's what I heard. That's what I read is going on in some parts of particular this article is about certain towns and ask what's going on. So again, we're going to set up something. Yes.
I designed a seaport for a state over in an African country. It's about anywhere from $2 to $4 billion. But the thing is, you take those countries. They have debt forgiveness. And then within another few years, they back again in debt.
Yeah.
Now, that there is some callous leadership. Or it is just that they just ain't going to never do good. Because that's not the first time.
If they follow the same principles, again, the principles that fail are going to always fail. You're not going to take a failure principle and make it work out right.
Yeah.
You're right. That's right. As long as they keep doing the same thing, you'll get the same result. That's the law of the universe.
You got some, you're right. You got some people that it just ain't in them. I'd say they curse, really. But that's another discussion.
Well, hey, whether they curse or not, the law is going to always work the same way. You know, it's the blessed place in the world, and that's what I see all the time in the Christian people talk about praying and God and all this, and you're following principles that don't work. God ain't going to bless those rules or principles that don't work. That's a violation of his law.
No,
it's
not.
He's not going to bless that. Yeah. And you find people not smart enough, not work praying hard, but they have to succeed. Why? Because they're following laws that God set up. Those laws work.
And another thing, when you talk about family, the key component of family is what? Kids. And blacks aren't having any kids.
Reproduction.
You remember when Romney was running for president against Obama? Romney was standing on stage with him, his wife, and seven sons. You was looking at Romney today, well, actually, with the grandfather, you're looking at Romney, the past, the present, and the future. How many kids Obama got?
Two.
He had two daughters. So his lineage ain't going to go no place.
According to his philosophy, how far you think that, how many, if you believe that abortion should be practiced, and women, how long do you think that's going to last?
How in the world is a nation, how are you going to create a nation and you're aborting all your kids? Like in 30 years after the Roe decision, they had aborted over 20 million. That's a whole damn nation.
It sure is. You know, Australia doesn't have a too large of a population. And there are a lot of countries that don't have a population of that many people.
Oh, hell yeah. No, they don't. So when you look at the Queen Elizabeth, and it also came through the Victorian age, because in the Victorian age in Britain is what gave the world a lot of its innovations, from irons to shades to toilets to just about any convenience that you find in a household, egg beaters, knives and forks, all that came about during the Victorian age in London, in Britain. And it played out today. Now, you know who has taken it and ran with it further? It's the Chinese businesses. L.A., you play a piece about that factory that's making those waffle irons or something.
Yep,
they have taken that
city
to a whole new level. You know, over there they got towns that the manufacturer in the town may be one or two items. It may just be irons. It may just be cell phone covers. But that's what that whole town specializes in. And then by that way, they take their presence on the world market.
Right. Delmar, share with Pianki might know all about it, but Delmar, share that story of that town in North Carolina you were telling me about last week.
I was talking about Kannapolis.
Yeah, that's it.
Was it Kannapolis? Yeah, I worked in some of you may remember it was called Cannon Mills was the name of the company. Cannon Mills, and they were the top of the line brand of towels and sheets and everything that was, you know, cloth wax. But again, they were the top of the line until I think it was NAFTA and all those jobs went over to the Asian people. But Cannon Mills made everything. I worked there in it for some time at night. But the key was the fact that the town, Kannapolis, the town was in Kannapolis, it's from a Greek word, city of looms. It was looms that make the process. But they were the dominant maker of that product, that industry, again, until all those jobs went elsewhere, Asia and India and wherever like that. And I never remember a story happened back. Some of you remember there was a plant in India. It was like a 8-story building or something like that. It was very high rise. And it had all these machines in there running 24/7, vibrating. And that whole thing crashed down and killed thousands or hundreds of, I don't know how many people were killed because that whole thing came crumbling down because that structure was never designed for that kind of vibration to go on 24/7. And finally, things just shook loose. But again, that's what those jobs were. But going back to the town, it was Kannapolis. The Cannoneers were the company, and they made all those things there. And they dominated the market until the market was opened up to the world and start competing with other people. And I don't think you even, I haven't seen, you go into Walmart, I don't think you ever find anything with Canon on there. Maybe, I don't know. So did I answer your question?
There was another place you mentioned in Memphis, Tennessee.
A dominating something out of Memphis?
It was either somebody or a company that you mentioned in Memphis, Tennessee. It wasn't FedEx. It was either another person or another company. Could have been a person. Somewhere in Tennessee. I'm thinking about Memphis.
I'm not sure what you have in mind for an individual right now. That doesn't click in my mind.
Sure.
You know, those emerging countries had done a job, too. You know, you take Africa. You had Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, parts of Nigeria that was producing cocoa. Well, Singapore and Taiwanese came and got some plants, and they went back to their own country. Now they dominate the cocoa industry in the world. The same thing with those Asian companies when it comes down to fertilizer. The process was created by a German scientist named Haber. He had a partner named Bosch, like Bosch that makes the electrical components for cars, Bosch carburetors, Bosch distributors, and that is a process created with natural gas called the Haber-Bosch process. Matter of fact, Haber was the designer of mustard gas that was used in World War I. Well, now the Asians control the manufacturing and production of fertilizer. You can't find a fertilizer company in the United States that can compete with him, whether it's the Koch brothers, Donaldson down here in Louisiana. And there's only been one license given in decades, and that's out in California of all places, for a company to start producing fertilizer. So, no, these emerging countries will come on and be the sole provider of the resources and the materials, products that they need in order to create a sustainable living for their countrymen and also then further sell to the world.
And what the reason that happened is when they embark on that, when they see potential, their goal is to dominate, not just to be in there as a player. They're going to dominate unless someone else does. Again, they take the ideas, the technology, if they're talking about the China business, of course they are. They're not the only one. Again, when they get it, they're not going to just say, well, we got it too. No, we're going to have it to the degree that we're going to dominate that area of industry. If you say that's what other nations have done, and America is from what I've heard, has been behind on that. And of course, there's a lot of reasons why we all behind on stuff. But yeah, you're right. I agree. That's what's going on. Yeah.
And you know what else they do? They send agents out all across the world.
Yeah.
Because if they make something, they send agents out across the world to infiltrate markets. For instance, used car parts. You had Chinese send agents into West Africa, and now most of your used car parts, like your AutoZone and so on and so on and so on, like they sell parts that has been reconditioned. We had a company in St. Louis that used to recondition. I think they Shreve Motors, Shreve Engines. They reconditioned engines, even today. And it was some others that used to recondition other components. They'd go through the junkyards that was all up and down a street in St. Louis called Eastern Avenue. It used to be the car junkyard capital of the world. And they would go to these junkyards and buy up these electrical parts. At that time, they were generators. Of course, now they've moved into alternators. And they were reconditioning. And they control that market. And that's what you see in these Asians. They do the very same thing. They take their
would that
people
be the same
and they
thing
travel.
With, Harbor Freight?
Yeah, you're right. Same thing. Harbor Freight. Harbor Freight is an outlet, a retail outlet for manufacturers that's going on like what you play in your skit about that Chinese manufacturer. Do the same
thing. Yeah, because most of that stuff's
it's functional. It works. It works. Well, see, America can't compete with that because your damn politics. Well, see, here's the thing. When you give minimum wage to $20 an hour, ain't no American going to compete with those companies over there because it doesn't take that much money to live. People say here, they talk about a living wage. Well, living wage, what you going to be doing? You're not going to be making no damn toilet seats. You ain't going to be making no toilet seats. You got to pay the workers $20 an hour. You ain't going to compete with them.
Nope.
I got Jeff here to tell you real quick. And I'll tell you all about this. I walk every morning for exercise. I go to a certain McDonald's here in the neighborhood and have a cup of coffee like that. And one of the problems coming with this wage where people are making, like you say, $10, $15 an hour, $20, whatever like that, and they work 5 days, and they grow a pretty good check, almost twice the size they used to. And what they're doing now, they won't come in and work because they got money to spend. And this particular McDonald's will be closed for hours because they don't have enough people to run the operation. Those people making money. Now, again, no one was thinking, well, when they're making $15 an hour, no. I make so much money at $15 an hour, twice as much when I was making $7 an hour. So I don't have to work as many hours. So I work 5 days, make 4.5. But 6-7 days a week, man, ain't gonna work. So who thought that out? But again,
you're absolutely right, Devin. They kept raising it until they got people to stay at home. When it was up to $8, they still coming to work. Let's raise it up to number two. And when they did, people say, "Yeah, I'm staying at home. I got enough.
Right. I don't need to work those 6 days." Right. And the holidays, I got enough money I made for the holiday. Man, I'm going to take all 3 or 4 of those days off because I got enough money now because I'm being paid so much. I can go out and enjoy the holiday. So I'm not going to work the holiday. So the store has to operate on half just to drive through. You know, 4 or 5 people in there and the cars in the lineup. But as far as the lobby and other things, no, we don't have nobody worth that. No, quiet. They're at home. They got enough money. They took off.
That money will be spent within a day or so. Then they got to go back to it. Some people might get fired for that.
That's right. It's a slave mentality. That's right. They're going to always be in substitute to that kind of thinking, and that's the kind of person who's never going to own anything other than a slave job that I do what the man say up to the point. And, again, now you see this backfire, so to speak, that we've been demanding this more money per hour. And a lot to be said about that. And now I don't need to work as many hours, so I'm not going to work. And what the man going to do? He's going to let me come back when I come back because I know the job. Yeah.
It ain't in them.
It is. No, that's right.
It ain't in them.
He's about owning McDonald's. He don't want to own no McDonald's. He said, look, we got all the opportunities, all the employees. We can get here and show you another man. I don't own no McDonald's. I just want to come here and work and not have to come back when I don't want to. That's all I want.
Well, with this, what you got, you have these migrants that are now in the country. I suspect that you're going to slowly but surely see them working at McDonald's. And
yeah, but who won't be buying the stuff? See, they would have to. They would see what Democrats are doing to bring these people in for the vote. That's what they're doing, and also to create electors and also a congressional district. That's what they're doing. That's Democrats in deep state, and that's going to actually. We should be working to get these people out of the country and make them come in legally. You know, that's all we ask. Do things legally. Why would you break the law in trying to accomplish what you're accomplishing? Because if you didn't break the law, it wouldn't accomplish because people don't want to have nothing to do with that. You're basically forcing people. If you take a million people out of a country that you already given aid to alleviate the problem why they say they're running from, then what you think is going to happen to that country? And what is it going to do to your country? You're taking on an extra burden of people who can't even read and write English.
It's a self-defeated strategy. It's not going to work, as you say. It's not going to work. What they're doing is going to come back and hit them flat in the face.
It's just like these transsexuals. It's just like these transsexuals, Delbert. Where are they going to go if they don't get after your kids? They can't have kids. They here for the moment. If you leave them alone and keep your kids away from them, they are only here for the moment.
No reproduction. That's right. And again, that is not going to work either. Except that's just a doomed philosophy. It's all self-serving just for the time being, and people are defending it in a way that you say, just think for a minute. If your parents practiced that, would you be here today?
Nope.
That's all you got to ask.
Nope.
So if you can't produce biologically, how in the hell are you ever going to produce in a material market? You ain't going to do it. Your mind is messed up on either idea. You're too damn lazy that when you lay down and have sex, that you let that product be born into the world where it can have a potential to become part of the market. Oh, no, you kill it. Well, if you that lackadaisical in your thinking, you never will take on the ideas and philosophies of production and manufacture in a categorical industry consumer market in the world. You ain't going to do it.
This universe was set up by a creator, and that system cannot be broken, adjusted, changed, nothing else. You can do all kinds of stuff with it, but it's not going to work except the way it was designed, and that's a part that humanity don't want to admit that. Some parts people want to try to push this other agenda, but like you say, this other agenda by design is self-defeating. It is not going to.
You're absolutely right.
The universe is trying to do. That's right.
It's been tried, proved, and tested for eons, and it has got you where you are today, but you got some ignoramuses, some warped mental minds that don't want to see it like that. Actually, they are trying to put in place that's going to bring about their own demise and want to bring others down with them. All right, L.A., I got to get out of here.
Okay, Bianchi, thanks for dropping by. Delmar, closing statement, then we're going to drop off for today.
Closing statement again, I believe that families we find in there the principles of success that have been, as a friend just said, proven to work. That's how we got this far. And when we look at that as an option, as a potential that's there, that's why I believe we're going to have this effect as for what we do. You can do a lot of things individually, but we can achieve more through a family approach to it than anything else. And perhaps when you do that, it's going to prevent, it works both ways, it's going to prevent a lot of the downside of things we see in our society today will be prevented because we turn on the light and the darkness will not be there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Delmar. Everyone have a good rest of the day.